Without saying who that is, John Coltrane on tenor sax, and a complement of extraordinary musicians, Lee Morgan on trumpet, Curtis Fuller on trombone, Kenny Drew on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums on this tune titled Blue Train. This is a title track, I should say, from Coltrane's 1957 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and we get together today. Yesterday, Trump was in a rage, and today he's in a rage. He's raging all the way to election day, thinking that it would make a tremendous change and get him elected on November the 3rd. Somebody should tell him by now, hey, you know, enough of the temper tantrums, go in a corner and just calm down. Well, another national election soon will end the way such elections have ended for decades now. And that is as a contest between the Republican and Democratic parties for political control at the federal, state, and local levels. Essentially, it's a political shutout, with little or no participation by any other party, the way it has been for decades, suggesting that voters like and want. They want it that way. So why the fuss when it turns out that at election time, it rarely gets more complicated than choosing between Tweedledee and Tweedledum? Why do voters continue to have such poor and limited choices? And why do we insist that this is the paradigm of politics? We're so good at politics, we don't need to clutter up. We don't need to clutter up the field with too many choices. We have perfected the art of selecting just the right number of political parties and the right number of people running for those political parties. We're going to talk about this today. I've talked about it before, but it's worth getting to it again. This idea of such a complex democracy having such a super simplistic political approach. Pick one, and your job is done. Are we really going to go through election year after election year with the same formula, where we have one of two parties really to choose from, who we could consider as being in the running for our votes? The Democratic Party and the Republican Party. How long are we going to put up with this silly formula? This insufficient formula. Why is it we do not have in practically any national election a range of choice, a range of parties competing with a range of ideas, fresh ideas, new ideas, suggesting that we should consider other ways of doing things. And there are benefits to be had by moving outside of this formula, which is old and tired and not necessarily helpful. It does not lend itself to progress. It does not lend itself to advancement, national advancement. What is going on with the United States? Of all countries that likes to boast about how great it is, that when it comes to politics, this is the standard formula, and it looks like nobody has any intention of changing it. So maybe we need to throw this question out to some people who might have some ideas. What is the answer? What is the reason that such very important political contests still are yielding candidates from the Republican Party and candidates from the Democratic Party? And that's about all there is. When is that going to change? When will we have the refreshing aspect to these contests where there's a third party and a fourth party and a fifth party? You mean to tell me all these years the best we can do is two parties? And in some cases, because they stand for the same thing, differing only here and there, we might as well call it a one-party state, except, you know, for a situation like this year where you have the president of the United States being so unusual as a choice to be considered. How can you explain this? That in a country so sophisticated, so experienced in the matter of politics, so clear about the miscellany of thought, how much we have to offer, people having different ideas about how this country can work best. And yet, here we are, almost at the gate, and we have two parties in a national contest, meaning we have two candidates to choose from. I don't know. Somebody has to explain to me what is going on here. Why is this happening? In this country of all countries that likes to boast about its politics and its complexities and freedom of choice and all of that stuff, and we find out as we approach the end of the game, it's the same thing. It's the same formula. Pick one of two and then go home and say you have exercised your democratic rights. Why do we have and continue to have such poor and limited choices? That's your question to answer today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's have some idea, please, because I don't think I could take another round of this at all. I think I'll just drop out of politics altogether, because this cannot continue. We cannot have this pitiful situation in which we essentially hamstrung. We have literally no choice. It's the same choice, so it's no choice. No new choices anyway. And there's got to be an answer. This can't be what we have to go through every time there's an election. It can't be. It just cannot be. If you're telling me that a country so complex that it likes to boast about its complexities and whatnot, and this is what it boils down to, pick one for president. Pick a Republican or pick a Democrat, and then go home. Pick in any office, attorney general, pick one, a Democrat or a Republican. This is what we're destined to be forever? I don't want to think that. And we ought to be ashamed, actually, and embarrassed. We ought to be embarrassed about this, because this tells us that there has been not an opening up, but a constriction in politics. And it's a very bad sign. It's a very bad sign. 888-874-4888. Let's hear from you and what you're thinking at 888-874-4888. All righty. Who is going to be up at bat first? I'd like to know. This really bothers me. And as the voting election day nears, I get particularly perturbed about this. It happens every election year. I can't stand the idea that people are expected to go out and get exercised about this notion of democracy and voting being so key to it, but at the same time, there's no choice, really. There's hardly a choice that is palatable. And we end up here at this precise point every election year. Can't we just change this for once? Can't we sing a different song? I don't know why it is that, you know, a country this great with such talented people and such an involved citizenry, that this is all we can do. This is the best we can do. Why is that? Why is it that we are stuck with the same tiresome twosome, Democrat and Republican? Khalil from South Carolina, you start us off today.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, how are you?
I'm well for so far.
Good for you.
I hope the family's doing, you know, your family's doing well and, you know, being as healthy as we can be.
We hanging in.
Hanging in, you know. This is totally different, but I just don't understand why the federal government doesn't pay a stipend to people to stay home till we can get a handle on this. You know, everyone has a power bill. Everyone has rent to pay. And incidentals.
What is your explanation as to why we can't seem to move beyond this formula and introduce something actually semi-exciting to say, well, we have more people that you can choose from and with other ideas that you may want to consider? Why is it that it boils down to pick one from column A and pick one from column B, and then you would have voted?
Okay. Well, the first reason is that we have to deal with a bicameral system. So everything's based on twos. So that's kind of the way it comes out. But that doesn't mean that we're defeated. What that means is that...
No, but even if it's based on twos, as you say, mm-hmm. There will never be a chance for a third party? We will never get to consider a third party?
No, I don't say never. I don't say never, but the way the system is set up now, and I'm glad you brought that question up, the way the system is set up now, what is required, I've been writing about this and thinking about this, is that because of the nature of the system, the first thing we have to do, which we should already have done and are doing, is build coalitions so that you have to have momentum behind you before you start to make changes, so that when people hear about the message, you have a following. That's the first thing. Now, once you get a coalition behind you with the right ideas and the right policies, then you have to pick a party to infiltrate. You must insert yourself into that party with the existing structure. Once you insert yourself, the part, your ideas, your coalitions into the existing structure, then you somewhat assimilate so that you learn how they work, learn their institutional memory, knows who's who and what's what. Once you get that done, then you assume control. But this begins with coalition building. You cannot do, a handful of people cannot do this.
But a party can. And why is it that we don't have three and four parties competing with each other for voters' attention?
Well, because the power elite would like to maintain a status quo. That's exactly why George Washington figured that out early on. He was against political parties.
So if I follow your reasoning, until we get coalitions formed, there's no hope of variation in terms of party choice from what
right.
we have now.
Right. And am I following you? Are you saying that we don't need that step, or we do?
I'm saying we definitely need something other than what we've got. It's not enough. It's not good enough either. And it is not democratic, small d, enough. Not for a country that occupies such a prominent space in the world community of nations, and the complexities of the world and the complexities of the nation itself. We cannot do well with just a choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledee all the time. It seems to me that we should have a vibrant contest every time an election is held, because we have different political thoughts and attitudes competing. And that's what is exciting.
Okay, I agree with you. And I think that we're moving in that direction, how slow it may be, how slowly it may be moving. If you look at the last presidential election, the reason that Sanders and Trump were the most popular, because remember, Sanders had the most popularity behind him. He had the most votes because they were different. Everybody's unhappy. Everyone, no matter what your political leanings are, Everyone's unhappy. They see the system is not working. The system is broken. Yes.
No, I'm saying, but Sanders blew it. Plain and simple. He blew it. He tried to recoup, but he blew it. He was very exciting as a candidate, and he should have succeeded in landing prominently on the list of people to choose from, but he blew it.
It was so disappointing.
Yes, it was. But we still need to solve this dilemma. We can't continue it with this, just the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. It's ridiculous. Thanks for getting us started today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How are you, David?
Coming along. Thank you very much. My program, Brother David from Brooklyn, is doing well on YouTube. Thousands of people are listening, I hear. The question that you asked us today is relatively simple. We, in no way do we live in a democracy. We live in oligarchy that is run by very rich and powerful forces, the corporations, and very rich people. The illusion that these people want to give us is that we are living in a democracy, you know, the people rule and all that. But under this system, when the founders built this system, they had no idea of creating a system where you had a democracy ruled by the people. So the ruling class that is in that oligarchy, that small fraction of people, they have, you know, reached a point where they are doing very well. They have this illusion of democracy with this, what I call the uniparty, which it's two divisions, Republican and Democrat. That's very clear. And they, some people say, well, Davey, you say this is, they're the same. No, they're not the same. They do things a little differently, but they have the same mission. I think the mission is the important part. And their mission is to maintain empire, which they have. And you can't have an empire and have democracy. That's impossible. So they give the people the illusion of democracy with the uniparty broke up into two divisions. And there's no viable other parties available. They do that because they control the state legislatures in every state, because voting is controlled by the state. So they control at the state level, the local level, and the national level. So they put on this show every once in a while with the idea that this is somehow democracy, when the two divisions of the ruling class go at it and get the people, some of the people involved. But we have no democracy here. This is a very shrewd and careful oligarchy that runs the country and wants to run most of the world. And
but
we have
David,
to get it
through
our heads.
David, I want to ask you a question. That this, what you were saying, I don't disagree with. I'm asking, what accounts for the complete absence of any other party, especially at a time that is so critical? And you would expect
And because the each state has rules about how a party can get on the ballot. You have to get all these signatures, thousands of so forth, and they make it very difficult to sabotage any group that wants to get on the ballot. And that's one way that they do it. And they give the people the illusion that they're involved in this Republican and Democrat Party when the people, you know, are sort of apparatchiks, you know, and, you know, you're rooting for the Republicans or Democrats, but you really don't control things. Things are controlled at the top by both of those groups, Republican and Democrat. And they make it very, very difficult for viable parties to get onto a ballot to challenge the uniparty made up of Republican and Democrats. So that's what you have all over the country, and they're so good at it, and they're able to manipulate and lie to the people so well and use all the means you have to divide people. So you have people all divided up, and you can manipulate them much better when you have them divided, and you have them thinking that they're having a Democratic election when you have Trump against Biden. And or any chance of any other party having candidates that are viable is next to impossible. So we're not going to get a change here by voting a change in favor of what's good for the people who live here until we break this system, and it won't come about as a result of going voting. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't vote, but I'm saying that just voting is not enough. I talk about these things in some of my posts, and David, Brother Dave from Bookman Speaks. It's got to be more. It's got to be action outside of just voting to make any change here. Just All voting right. is not going to do it.
All right. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Ali from New York, how are you? Haven't heard from you in a while.
I know, but I have been listening. I think I learn more listening to you, especially to you as my teacher, and on some of the callers. So.
You know, it's funny because we think the same way about you. We think that we learn a lot from listening to you.
Yes, and before I answer your question, I just wanted to let all the audience here in New York, but you could also, some of the cities, they're also going to have this, and this is every year, and you're probably aware of that. This year is the 25th National Day of Protest to stop police brutality and repression and the criminalization of the generation. So this is 022, and this is the day that we come out every year. They have been doing it for 25 years, and we're going to assemble at 3:30 at Union Square. Come, whoever could come, please come and join us. And you have a Facebook page. You just have to go 022 NY, and some other cities, they also have it. North Carolina, South Carolina, just look it up, 022, and you will be able to see if they have it in your city. And it's this Thursday, 022, October 22nd. And please wear a mask, and please wear black. Thank you. Thank you for letting me make this announcement. And this is where I'm going to be at 3:30 so I could listen to your show and then go over there at 3:30 to Union Square. Thank you. And, and I just wanted to say, yes, I wanted to say this, and I know David talks a lot about our corporation, and he always talks about that and the money. But, you know, since the creation of this nation, you know that we call it now fake news? It has been a myth in this country that this government was created by the people for the people. And if you take a look at the Bolivian election, which it was worth it to have all these different parties, but especially three of them, that you knew that if you voted for one of them, you bought it for something different. And this is the problem in this country. It's a myth thinking that if you vote for the Democrats or the Republicans, you're going to get something different. Money in this country speaks, and the other rest of the things you could just throw in the garbage. I know that Ed always calls and said getting to locally. I don't know if he talks about local politics, but I would say this. Even these local politicians, they don't have the best interest of us. And the reason that I'm saying that is because I remember Bloomberg putting all that money out there and buying himself an extra term. So if it's true that you will be able to do something locally, how come this man was able to use the city council, even though a lot of them they voted no, they still approved for him to run one extra term. And now Cuomo, in this country, a Democrat, what you call a Democrat, so... And you're talking about having all this liberty and democracy. Right now, he's trying to get the Green Party off and the Family Party off the ballot. What do these people, they have done to him? You know that we don't have anyone in our city council and in a state senate or representative in the state as coming from the Green Party. Or the Family Party. So they don't do any damage to him. So everything here is fake news. And like David said, you're not going to do it through voting because voting here is fake. It's a myth that you're going to accomplish something by voting. We go, we put our stamp to all these people that they run. And at the end of the day, they look at you and they give you your back. Because they're never going to do anything for us. And we have to, this system, you're never going to be able to change the system. Never. Unless there's a million of people going out on the street. And this is what it was done in Bolivia that people don't know. I went to bed after 1 in the morning on Monday watching the result of those elections. You know why? Because the indigenous in that people of color went weeks after weeks on the street demanding election. Are they going to be, are Luis Arce going to be able to take position? We will see. We will see. But he won. And not only he won by more than 20 points. So, unless people go down on the street, and remember, we have a high military in this country, so I don't know what it will happen. But the system, in order to change in this country, you have to dismantle the whole system. That will be the only way to change it. Voting won't do anything for us, especially us,
all right. People of color. Well, thank you, and I'm glad to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing. Rudy from Montreal, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
Hello, Rudy.
Somebody, some very smart wit came out with an idea. His suggestion or her suggestion was that each eligible elector would receive a voucher of $100. And this voucher would be used to support the candidate of their choice. This would eliminate these very wealthy people who are supporting a foreign power or a foreign party. And there would be leverage for each elector in the family to actually produce a better outcome, I believe, for the voting system. Do you agree?
Well, the minute you, no, I don't agree. I think it's tantamount to buying votes. And it interferes with the whole idea of the electoral process, which should be free from bribes and
with
any
all
other
due,
kind of influence.
With all due respect, the fact is money is essential. Whether it is the elector, whether it is the voter, or it is vast corporate and foreign entities that provide the money has got to come from somewhere. So it is only fair that people not only have the vote, but they have the power to make that vote count.
But we know that money is a major corruptor, and good intentions are always undermined by money. We have no consistent history of money producing good without some kind of tainting going on. We have to be very careful about involving money in politics. We see what happens now.
But people feel that their vote doesn't count.
This requires a person to have to raise millions of dollars. I don't get it.
But the people feel that their vote is now useless.
Yes.
With providing them with this, what's it? What is a voucher of $100? Nothing. Peanuts. But providing that, they would have some type of control of who they're going to give their vote to. Right now, 46% they claim of voters don't vote. So why? Because they feel it's of no use. But
why would
only
money
allowing
make it useful?
Sorry?
Why would money suddenly change the lay of the land is what I'm trying to say. Why would money bring about such an effective and desirable change? Why don't we hold on to our natural suspicion that money corrupts?
But it's not true necessarily. Money is utilized to survive. But the thing is that to be a candidate...
We're talking politics here. Politics and money are a lethal combination.
Okay, well, you need money to be able to get your message out. In other words, Tulsi Gabbard had to try to get $65,000 to be able to be participating in the debates of the candidates. It is essential. They have to travel. They require
I understand you're making the... I was highly critical of Tulsi Gabbard because I don't think she took this thing very seriously at all. She didn't understand how politics works.
Maybe that's...
If you are a candidate or you want to be a candidate, the first thing you have to do is raise some money. You can't raise money, devote inordinate amounts of time and effort to raising money and conduct a credible campaign. It can't happen.
Well,
you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that.
She
had principles. You plan your run, and you go and ask people what it is that you need to do with... what is the sequence you need to follow? You ask questions.
But you don't find
yourself in the middle of a campaign and then you realize you have no money.
She's been elected, I think, she's in Congress for 7 years. She knows what the situation is. It wasn't that. Those were the requirements. All the candidates have to do it. So if the electorate had this power in their hands... More diversified candidates would be elected.
Well, I doubt it.
Okay.
Because I'm going with the history of money as a corrupting force.
Well, maybe they could make love instead and get time on the air. I don't know.
Well, there are many ways that you could do it, but you do have to plan. And you do have to plan ahead of time. It is not just, well, if we do this, this will happen. You're in the real world, for crying out loud.
Leatrice, the elections run at $1 billion. No individual, except for the very, very wealthy, could come up with that kind of money.
Well,
we're talking $1 billion to get elected to be president when the job only pays $250,000 a year.
And if Tulsi Gabbard or anybody else wants to join that mess, then you have to be prepared for the mess. You're not running on a different ticket. You're not running under a different banner. You're not seeking to launch a new party. You're trying to join the craziness. So you have to learn how to manage the craziness. You can't suddenly be in it and then say, well, we have to change the rules. The rules are the rules. You opted and elected to go with the rules.
But she met the criteria that was required of her. But the thing is that if she were president, the entire situation, the evil situation that is now, would change for the better. She will build bridges rather than building walls.
Well, that is what we hope. But you see, money corrupts even that. You can't predict what a person
What is the substitute, then, if it's not money?
The person stand strong, but the person go right. When it comes to money, you cannot predict anything.
Well, then, in other words, politics this election should not have any money at all. Nobody should have the right to invest money in it. Is that how it should work?
I think that we shouldn't be naive as to think that you could run in this day and age without having some kind of a pool of money. But I think these things have to be looked at and discussed openly with a sober mind.
Sure.
Once they introduced the idea that money is necessary to buy media, and you've got to have a staff, and you've got to have an office, and you've got to have all these expenses.
Sure.
You also had the other layer on top of that, which is the money is demanded to choke you out of competition. They know full well that the average candidate can't raise more than X number of dollars. They know that. So they make it a requirement that you have to raise not only X, but X plus Y dollars. You have no hope of competing. It's a very corrupt system.
Sure.
And it isn't fixed by money. It is fixed by rules, new rules and laws.
Sure.
That keep in mind that what you're after, what we are after, is a true democratic society where people have the ability to compete and not be forced out because of money. And there you go. That's the first instance of how money is used in a corrupt way to choke people out of office. They can't even think about running for office because they can't raise hundreds
of
thousands
of
dollars.
Which is wrong. In other words, what should happen then is that to become a candidate, a very minimal sum should be available. Say $1,000. You present $1,000, and then you can become a candidate. And if you are elected, then they will, but providing the number of votes you get, they will reimburse you part of this thousand.
It's too far gone for any such altruistic thinking and moves. Too far gone. We're way down the rabbit hole on this.
But that's why the third parties can't succeed. You know, the Green Party needed three-quarters
need
of a million dollars.
We need to have an upswell in independent political movements that know what they're doing and that know how to run campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
You need really dedicated people
true.
To form new parties and move behind the candidates and in a concerted way get them elected.
Sure.
Money is not the answer. It's a part of the answer.
Well, it's a voucher.
What you're lacking generally is...
It's a voucher. It says 100, that's all. It's not real money. It's a voucher.
What people need to understand is, what does money signify in a political campaign? What is it meant to communicate?
It's meant to communicate, have the ability to have goods and services.
Yes, but why is it that we have,
it seems,
no limit as to how much a person should be raising? You take any presidential candidate.
You're right.
I mean, when
you're
is
right
it enough?
That is evil.
Oh, that's what we got. we got lots of evil. And it's at the congressional level and the state assembly level, the state senate level and the city council level. It's the same story. So the money creates a problem. It really does. And we have to figure out instead how to build. How do you build viable movements? They will have to raise some kind of money. We understand that. But the focus should be building movements, not raising money.
And so, in other words, corporations should not invest in the elections because it's obvious that the only aims that they want and the laws that they want, that they will succeed with their own aims, and they couldn't care less about anybody else. That's why the people have to have some money to be able to counterbalance this insanity.
The people need to press for new laws and regulations.
But they won't
get them. We can't have this unbridled involvement under the idea that a corporation is a person and therefore can do X and Y and Z. We have to have all these things revisited. It is unfair that a multi-billion-dollar corporation gets to make donations at a level that individuals can't even hope to match.
Exactly.
This is the corrupting effect of money in politics. And there is no indication that the law as it exists and elected officials have any desire to change it.
Right, because they're profiting enormously, because they're keeping the will of the people out of the electoral process because they just become discouraged that nothing is happening.
You know it,
their own wishes are not.
So the issue is, how does that get fixed? And it needs to be fixed. And it needs to be discussed in the open as something that must be done to save whatever is left of our democratic process.
Right.
Thanks so much for calling in and
Thank
contributing
you.
Today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Hanging in there.
Good, good.
In regards to the last... these parties, you know you're not going to win.
You faded out for a while. You faded out for a while, so I lost you.
okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. All right. In regards to the last caller who talked about money, and I agree with you, Utrice, you got to be careful with that, because when you're talking about the Democrat and Republican Party and you're trying to use money as your primary tool, they will outspend you and they will eliminate you by the way of money. So we have to have another strategy or strategies in regards to trying to take down the duopoly in regards to the, you know, question that you or the topic that you have on the table right now, because these both of these parties, you know, they have millions to waste. So you're not going to outspend them. So, you know, we have to come up with different strategies. But, you know, the one thing that I've always stressed in regards to third parties, and, you know, this is the thing, we have to start at the ground level with third parties. And what I mean by ground level, I mean, and I think David from Brooklyn had mentioned this too, in regards to this, the work of a political party is from election to election. That's the time between elections. So the work has to be done during those times, not at the time of election, not at the time when somebody needs to get voted. The work is done between those times. So if you're talking about doing a third party, the work has to be done at the grassroots level. They have to be seen. And then at the same time, you have to go for realistic positions, you know, like, say, for instance, here in Chicago, like alderman or, you know, water commissioner or something like that, and represent your party within some sort of body of government, and then expand from there. It's going to take time. It's going to take time for any third party to put their name on a presidential election ballot. I'm looking at least, if nobody's doing this work right now, I'm looking at least the next 15 to 20 years before a real third party is a threat, because I don't see a lot of third parties, you know, out here in these neighborhoods or anywhere, you know, claiming to be the party of the people. And I say this because I think Chicago could be a ground for a viable third party. I mean, you know, when you look at when I look at Chicago politics, you know, the Democratic Party still has a stronghold on it. But I see that their influence is kind of waning a little bit in regards to political influence, because the last couple of mayoral elections, the voter turnout has gone down significantly. So I think people are kind of getting tired of the Democratic Party, but at the same time, they're not going to switch to the Republicans. So I believe that Chicago could be a training ground for a third party candidate. We just need to organize and get one.
Yes, you do. And that is hard work in and of itself. Because people, I hate to say, they don't want to work too hard at anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, stick-to-itiveness. And they have a plan and they're following the plan. And, you know, it's about bringing people in to share a burden of responsibility for a community and its future. We don't have those leaders in great supply. What we have are people who have strange ideas about politics. You know, politics means you get a title and you dress nicely. But that is not what politics should be. We don't deal with the transformative nature of what politics should be. We have different points of reference. We all over the place, and we're not agreeing. We don't have a shared vision, shared unity. We don't have that going on right now. So that is the work. Everybody is kind of like an individual. You have this person over here who promises to be a good candidate. But, for example, you hear that story a lot in the Democratic Party, But you don't see the Democratic Party working hard to create its new leadership, to support its new leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is your business. You want to run, you could run, but that's your business. The party does not have a reputation as a supportive party, bringing along its new leaders, providing mentorship, providing support.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that kind of work. You have to raise your own money and do that and figure it out yourself.
And that's what the third parties have to do. That's what the third parties have to do. They have to build this on the ground level. And you mentioned sticking to the plan, because if you're creating a third party, you're going to take some losses. You're going to take some losses, but you got to keep going at it. You got to keep going at it. It seems like people take these losses and then they disappear, not knowing that if you run the next time and if you do the work between elections, you can get where you need to go. You know, I just didn't understand when, like, Chuy Garcia here in Chicago lost the mayoral election. He just kind of disappeared and went back to his old job as the Cook County Commissioner. But it was like he could have easily won been mayor of Chicago last year when they were running. So I just didn't understand why he gave up on that. But, you know, that's politics.
Because that attitude ends up being rampant throughout their system. A guy who, like Chuy, was promising. He needed some hand-holding. He needed some support. He needed some reinforcement and didn't get it. The party pretty much said, "We're glad that you want to run. Let's see you do it." That's not the way you support a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You don't leave them out there, you know, twisting in the wind. It's almost like you have to consider it almost like a university. You want to run? Take these preliminary courses 2 or 3 or 4 years ahead. So you learn how systems work, what to be prepared for. And all along the way, you should consider yourself an undergrad. You're learning. You can't, the expectation is that somehow, simply because you're able to launch a candidacy, that you know what you're doing. And they leave you out there. And the perfect example of what I'm talking about is the late Harold Washington, who had an entirely different attitude about running and about preparing to run. He spent a lot of time, invested a lot of time and effort and energy in studying how to run and to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's so successful.
Yeah.
He didn't just wake up, you know, in the morning and say, "Okay, I'm going to run for mayor of Chicago." And that's how that happened. He built coalitions. He built a support system. He solicited opinions and advice from just about anybody willing to give it.
And he
learned as he, you know, perfected his plan. But the party itself, I must say this, the Democratic Party has a sad and sorry history of leaving its candidates, even promising ones, leaving them out, to dry, hanging them out to dry and leaving them on their own. This does not inspire confidence at all or loyalty to a party and its supposed goals. It doesn't work that way. Oh, I hear music. That means I have to say goodbye, Henry. We'll hook up again. Thank you all for calling in and contributing to the program, but we're out of time. Let's talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.